Welcome to the podcast series for AJP Heart and Circulatory Physiology. I'm your host, Kara Hansel-Kean. Today we'll discuss the article by Liu et al. Titled, Right Ventricular Arrhythmogenic Remodeling in Heart Failure. This article published online October 5th, 2012. My guests today are Editor-in-Chief William Stanley, lead author Igor Efimov, and expert Kenneth Larita. Let's get started.
Thanks, Kara. It's well established that patients with heart failure commonly die of sudden death due to cardiac arrhythmias. However, the reason for this is not well understood. Increased dispersion of repolarization has been suggested to underlie this increased arrhythmogenesis. But previous studies by this group on isolated human left ventricle did not find major differences between non-failing and failing hearts. In a present study, the authors focused their attention on repolarization dynamics in a right ventricle from heart failure patients. Now, the right ventricle is commonly overlooked in left ventricular failure, but clearly it can undergo pathophysiological remodeling. The results of the study show enhanced dispersion of repolarization in the right ventricle, which could partially explain the greater sudden death in these patients. Igor, what do you see as the major take-home findings of the study?
Well, you've done a very good job introducing our research on human hearts. And indeed, in our previous studies, we focused entirely on left ventricles, which are the main pump of the heart. And the remodeling which we found in left ventricle at the endocardial surface was rather unimpressive indeed. However, there was remodeling in subepicardium and also remodeling on the conduction side. So there is a dramatic slowing of conduction, for example, in the left ventricle. But in general, unless you add to the system strong adrenergic stimulation and perhaps also metabolic inhibition, we really didn't see any automaticity in left ventricles. And then we looked at the clinical evidence, and which actually suggests that the real major source of arrhythmogenesis, including ectopic activity in the ventricles, is actually not left ventricle, but right ventricle, especially the Bermuda Triangle of the heart, which is right ventricular outflow tract, which for unknown still reasons is the leading source of arrhythmias and mortality in humans. And it's very vulnerable to remodeling processes, which may originate in the left ventricle, but ultimately target very vulnerable right ventricle. So when we looked at the existing clinical evidence on remodeling in the right ventricles, it's very, very small, almost non-existent. So very little is known about action potential duration, conduction velocities, and gene expression in the right ventricle of human failing heart versus non-failing heart. And having the opportunity here in our laboratory to examine these processes in human hearts, not in animal models, but in human hearts, we, of course, took this opportunity and conducted this very first, perhaps still preliminary study, but found something very, very interesting. So basically, first of all, we, in contrast to left ventricle, we did find that there is a significant prolongation of action potential duration on the endocardium of right ventricle in contrast to left ventricle. And it is explained also by finding with the gene array where we see a number of potassium channels which are responsible for repolarization are significantly downregulated, which would go along with prolongation of action potential duration. But probably even more importantly, this particular study shows that a number of theories which previously been developed within the framework of nonlinear dynamics actually explain arrhythmogenesis in the right ventricle. So we looked at, for example, a theory which, in fact, our expert, Dr. Ken Laurita, pioneered with David Rosenbaum a number of years ago on discordant alternance as a precursor of onset of lethal ventricular arrhythmia. So we did find that only those failing hearts will be arrhythmogenic, which also show evidence of discordant alternance. We also looked at conduction velocity restitution curve, and again, a number of groups demonstrated that the steepness of restitution curve is a predictor of arrhythmogenesis, and again, we found that arrhythmia can be induced only in those hearts in which we also observe very steep restitution curve of the conduction velocity.
Thanks, Igor. Ken, what do you see as the strengths and potential weaknesses of the study?
Number one, it's human data, which is hard to come by. I think that provides some very important insight. And then also, as Igor has mentioned, there are some mechanistic relationships that are suggested, such as that between arrhythmias, dispersion of repolarization, and alternans. It's nice to see that what we've shown in animal models may also be happening in models of human disease. And then finally, one that I think is the most interesting, we've touched on a little bit already, Dr. Efimov has previously reported the absence of a dispersion of repolarization across the transmural wall in the same model. Now, this was a very surprising finding because left ventricular transmural dispersion of repolarization has been observed in some animal models of heart failure, and dispersion of repolarization in general is a very important mechanism of arrhythmias. So either the dispersion of repolarization as a mechanism of arrhythmia is irrelevant in heart failure, human heart failure, or the dispersion of repolarization happens to be located somewhere else in the heart. And that's indeed what they found. I think there's one weakness that is important, and that was the variability in the cause of heart failure across patients and also the variability in the results. For example, if two separate animal models of heart failure were reported with an N of 2 and an N of 3, it would never get published. On the other hand, the variability of patients is what happens in real life. So not all patients have the same cause of heart failure. Also, I think the variability in the results reflects that not all heart failure patients die from arrhythmias, which we already know. So on one hand, what may be a limitation, that is the variability in the model and in the results, I think is actually a somewhat of a strength of the study.
Thanks, Ken. I was really impressed by the fact that you can get these human hearts and perform these studies.
So this is already our effort with 5-year history. So basically some years ago, I was really interested in translating animal studies, which Ken commented on, specifically on transmural dispersion of repolarization, indeed identified in several animal models in heart failure. I wanted to really look what happens in humans. And we were lucky here at Washington University to have a team of surgeons, starting with Dr. Nader Moazami, who was the lead transplant surgeon at Washington University. Unfortunately, he left several years ago for Chicago. But with his help, we initiated this program. And in fact, 2 weeks ago, we celebrated acquisition of heart number 200. So essentially, in 5 years, we've acquired and studied in vitro already 200 human hearts, out of which we have about 60%. These are hearts of patients who undergo transplantation, and hearts are donated for research. And also about 40% hearts of donors. These are donor hearts, again, donated for transplantation or research, but not accepted for transplantation for various reasons. And this precious gift of human hearts allowed us to study so many different interesting areas in the human heart, which was really exciting for all my students who really make major effort working very hard, because you have to be 24/7 on call, carrying pager, and you can be paged at 3 a.m. on Monday, which is actually most likely time to be paged according to our statistics. And you have to basically go and do it. It's very, very hard. Sometimes students work for 24, even more hours straight, because sometimes they are called to harvest the heart after a whole day of work, of regular work, of regular class work, for example, or other animal experiments. So this is really outstanding contribution of our lab members.
I think it would be interesting to compare the results of this study to any clinical results. There should be some clinical data either existing or some studies that could be performed in the future. It should be very doable to measure either activation recovery intervals or monophasic action potential recordings from the RV endocardium during a clinical study. And this should be a very reasonable way to confirm the results that was reported in the present study.
Absolutely. This is essentially a key issue for us now, how to compare it to the clinical data. And unfortunately, the only data I am aware of from the right ventricle has been reported at a couple of conferences in England. There is very, very little known about humans, much less than about guinea pigs or dogs or mice.
It's possible that your study could provide a rationale for clinical scientists to repeat some of these measurements.
Ken, Igor, thanks for a really interesting discussion on this important translational paper. Kara?
You've been listening to an AJP Heart and Circ podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at ajpheart.physiology.org. Thank you.